segment. It's the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode, highly anticipated return episode of the Kyle Selagi Variety Hour. To quote, or brought to you by USA Today Sports Media Group. Gotta get that in. Bill's Wire. To bring up or to reference my favorite Lil Wayne album, Sorry for the Wait. Good album or mixtape. I don't know what it was, but
It was a mixtape. Yeah.
Yeah, Sorry for the Wait. Last week, I should probably explain why I'm apologizing for the wait. This is our return from a short hiatus. We didn't have an episode last week because, we'll say it was because the week before I said we might not have an episode last week because I was going to a wedding. It's not because we actually recorded an episode that was an hour and 15 minutes, but my audio was messed up. That's absolutely not what happened whatsoever.
No.
And then this week we had I had a personal situation come up, so we couldn't record it on Monday, but it worked out because it is now Tuesday night. The trade deadline has passed, so now we can talk about all the exciting moves the Buffalo Bills made. You know, the just really good trades they made to really set them up for the playoffs. So we'll talk about those, and their just very, very good game that they played, the great performance they had in Week 8 against the Philadelphia Eagles, that great game that everyone in Buffalo is still talking about. So joining me, Kyle Selagi, to discuss these wonderful topics first, it's returning. It's Rich Kowalski. Rich, how are you?
I'm doing well. You know, I think I took over Justin's spot as the number one, you know, number one correspondent or co-host with you. It's great. You know, Bills look like a dumpster on Sunday in many, many ways, but you know, they made up for it by not making any trades. So, you know, it's good.
It's great. And Rich, I'm going to set you up for a perfect dad joke here. So I'm expecting you to knock this out of the park.
Okay.
Rich, did you just get your hair cut?
Mm-hmm. No, I got my ears lowered.
Oh, that's good. I thought you were going to say, no, I got them all cut. Oh. What's the better dad joke? Yeah, well, yeah. Rich just got a haircut, so that's
yeah. I did. Big news. I didn't tweet about it though.
That's everyone. Everyone needs to know that on this video podcast here, because you're having a haircut.
I should just tweet, "Hey, I got a haircut." If anyone wants to know.
Yeah.
My ears are colder now.
10 likes for a pic.
Yeah. Share, you will have bad luck for 5 years.
A chain message.
Get some boomers to reply.
You have to just do it via email, though.
Hey, there he is. McKenna Middlebrook not joining this week because it is his girlfriend's 21st birthday.
Hey.
So, happy birthday to her. It's the good cheers. Birthday. Yeah, cheers to that. But in his place, it is returning after a multi-week hiatus. It's Justin DeLauro. D-Lo, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm very excited to be back. I'm very excited that the Buffalo Bills have won 71.4% of their games this year. Mm-hmm. And
the mathematician.
And we're just gonna like just cream them today for just Sunday's manure show.
Mm. Well, not only that, but also that they didn't make any trades at the trade deadline.
Mm.
But before we get into all this Bill's goodness, Rich, you were also disappointed by something else this weekend, and that was the Tottenham Hotspur's performance. So, in this segment, the returning Premier Rich. Rich, break down what happened this weekend.
Oh, well, Tottenham, you know, they went up went down to Liverpool, and, you know, Liverpool's first place in the Premier League, so it's a big game, big match, and Tottenham scored early, first minute, ball went off the post. Harry Kane was right there, headed it in. I was loving it, dancing in the aisles, as they say, in my living room. I loved it. It was great. And then after that, it just really went downhill. And Spurs lost 2-1. So it was terrible. On top of, you know, the Bills game at the same time, it was wonderful. You know, really great Sunday. But Manchester United won. They McKenna was surely happy about that, but probably not surely happy that they missed two penalty kicks. Arsenal drew, so that was really my consolation prize for the weekend. They drew to a really bad team, Crystal Palace. But other than that, nothing really happened in the Premier League. Oh, Pulisic is, you know, Captain America bullshit. you know, he had a hat trick against...
You don't like the hat trick?
No, I just don't like Pulisic or Chelsea. Chelsea and Tottenham have a bitter North London rivalry.
A blood
well,
rivalry.
Well, not North London. They're not North London. They're just Chelsea.
London. It's a derby. Yeah.
Chelsea's gross. End of story. That's pretty much it. But Premier League, it's looking good. They're 2 weeks from now, big matchup. Liverpool and Man City, two of the top two teams facing off. 2 weeks from now. Mark your calendars.
Arsenal is imploding.
I love it.
I didn't watch the game, but I do, from what I understand, their captain was subbed off. Granit Xhaka? I can't pronounce names, especially not ones at the beginning.
Granit Xhaka.
Yeah. And then he was, as he was being taken off, he was booed, and then he, like, did the Hulk Hogan, like, cupped his hand to his ear, like, come on, bring it on, and then he took off his shirt.
Wow.
So, like, for Bills fans, imagine last year when Kyle Williams was subbed off the field at the end when Sean McDermott gave him that basketball player farewell where he called the timeout and had Kyle Williams come off the field for a final time.
Come off the court.
Instead of cheers resounding through the town of Orchard Park, it's boos. And then Dude. Kyle Williams does the Hulk Hogan,
gosh.
Pythons, hand to ear, and then just takes off his jersey. It'd be akin to that. So that's Arsenal right now.
I mean, anyone that plays for Arsenal deserves that. But aside from that, they are imploding. It's great. I mean, because at the same time, Tottenham's kind of imploding, where they're not really playing up to standards. They made it to the Champions League final last year, and they look nothing like a team that made it to the Champions League final right now. But on the flip side, it's really, really satisfying to see Arsenal just fall apart after beating really bad teams in the beginning and their fans getting all hyped up about it. You know, it's good. They might fire their coach, too. They might, as they say, they might sack him.
Sack the coach.
And plus,
sack
him. Tottenham
Unai Emery sacked.
Tottenham is closer to relegation than they are.
They
to
are.
Champions
Tottenham
League.
I'm not saying Tottenham is good. Right now,
it's just fun to see somebody else implode. Like, we'd be happy if New England imploded.
I would love it if Man City or Liverpool imploded, but that's never going to happen. But in the NFL, imagine New England, and imagine right now New England and San Francisco just implode and go like 8-8 or something ridiculous. I mean,
that'd be fun. It's going to happen.
Somebody's going to implode.
I mean, then again, Arsenal is not as good as those teams. Arsenal's more like the Browns of the. I'm just kidding. They've won a lot of championships.
That's actually not a bad comparison.
I mean, if you think about this year, they spent a lot of money. Both teams spent a lot of money to get players that are underperforming. They had a lot of chances to do well. They got a coach that's supposed to be and not too great.
I think Arsenal is more like the Jets because they have no reason to not.
Yeah,
be
that
good,
makes sense. I could,
but
see
they're
that.
Just perennially disappointing.
Yeah. It's great to watch.
Absolutely no reason to not be a competitive team.
File that under things you love to see.
Exactly.
For me and Nick Wotan, our editor, we love seeing Arsenal implode. So
you love to see it. West Ham, I don't even know how they're doing. I've been watching more Bundesliga this year. I've been watching a lot of German.
Bundesliga.
I've been to Germany, Rich. I can pronounce it however I want.
Okay. Fair
also,
enough.
And, like, we're not going to make this a soccer podcast, but also we haven't talked in a week.
But it's variety.
So, yeah, it's a variety. Let's talk about whatever I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. I've been watching a lot of videos on RB Leipzig. And
Red Bull.
Yeah, Red Bull Leipzig. And just a lot of people who listen to this, I'm sure they don't care about this or know anything about German soccer.
Skip ahead.
Right. But in Germany, there is a thing called a 50+1 rule, meaning that 50% of a club's members plus one, so it's a majority stake, has to be fans. And there is a team that Red Bull, the energy drink, has kind of subverted this by making their... Or initially, they bought this fifth division team, and then they only had like 17 club members, all of which were Red Bull employees. So it was essentially a takeover of this club, which they've tried to, with the 50+1 rule, they've tried to completely outlaw in Germany, but Red Bull got out of this, and then in the past 10 years, not even, they've taken this fifth division club into the first tier, and I've been watching videos on them, and a lot of people hate them, I guess, or from what I've heard, a lot of people hate Red Bull Leipzig because they are owned by a company, by a corporation. I can't talk. I'm losing my voice. I've had a sore throat for a week. I need a Red Bull quick. But from what I understand, just like everyone hates them. But then I talked to my German friend, who I've referenced multiple times on this show.
Your one German friend.
My one German friend. So he was speaking on behalf of all of Germany, and we had this conversation a while ago. But he and his dad, of course, huge German soccer fans. And he's like, oh, no, everyone in Germany is just like, oh, no, they're good.
Like, yeah, they are good. They're in the Premier League. I mean, not the Premier League, the Champions League.
They're in the Champions League, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're fun to watch. They almost won, I think, the other day. I think they lost, but...
But it's just like, I just got off the phone with an hour and a half with my friend. We're talking about the American media, yeah. Which is fun. But just like in general, just the media in general tries to paint this team as like everyone hates them. Then you talk to people and they're like, oh, no, they're good. We can't hate them. They've built it the right way. We don't care that it's a billion-dollar company. They built it good.
This brings up another point that I have always... well, always in the last 2 years, have stood by, is that the NFL, if they had a minor league or, like, a league below, they should absolutely have some sort of relegation. Like, these big leagues in the world, they have, you know, 3-4 levels of the league, and then the bottom three teams end up going down a level, and the top three teams in the playoff of the league below end up going up, where you have fresh teams coming in there. Like, imagine... It would just make so much more sense in the NFL. But
who from regardless. The XFL will be coming up next year?
Yeah, yeah.
Dallas Renegades. Are they gonna
revive the USFL to bring that up and be the third tier of NFL football?
We might as well just take a Canadian team.
Yeah, make it the CFL. That'd be fun. But I love that concept. I love the idea of promotion relegation. You get so many good stories.
Yeah.
It's just so fun to watch. And I love the idea of just this team from a small community. Like, if they're good for long enough, they can literally go from the lowest league to the top league, to the Champions League eventually, hypothetically. But also, imagine telling that to, like, to Terry Pegula or another NFL owner, hypothetically, yeah. Your team could go to the second division and you're going to lose out on all the TV revenue and merchandise sales and everything. They'd be like, nope, I'm good.
And plus, how can all these teams suck for the number one pick?
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, that's what there'd be no draft. That'd be the
there
issue.
Would be no tanking.
I mean, it's
the tanking team would be the fourth from last.
Imagine telling that to a team. Actually, if you're not good, you won't be rewarded. You'll be relegated to a whole different league, and you won't have there'd be no incentive to tank because you'd be losing out on a bunch of money.
NBA should do it. I mean, NBA that's what lottery's for, kind of. But what if they just do a lottery top 10 picks? That is also a potential Band-Aid for tanking.
Oh,
but
tanking.
You still have teams that want to, you know, I want to be a part of that if I'm a team that's in the bottom 10.
I do want to talk about tanking as well. We'll get into that. But first, I have to go to D'Lo. D'Lo, you have a Premier Rich thing because your soccer season just got done. The team that you coach, how did that go?
My soccer season did end. Unfortunately, we ran into the number one seed in our playoff bracket, and they were really, really good.
Who was that?
The Hamburg Bulldogs.
Ooh.
In Hamburg, New York, not Hamburg in Germany.
Hamburg.
As the aforementioned.
St. Pauli FC.
But they were awesome. It was a tough game. But,
Hamburg
you know,
FC.
I'll do my Sean McDermott. It was a great season. We worked hard and and now we're looking forward to next year.
It's a process.
Just
gotta grow in the offseason.
Do you mind sharing the final score or should you not?
I will share it. It was not the worst score of the weekend, but we lost 8-0.
Okay. Well, I mean, Leicester beat Southampton on, I think it was Friday or Saturday in the Premier League. They beat them 9-0. So
ooh, yeah.
We could always be that.
There was a game in the bracket that ended up 17-0.
Wow.
I don't know how that happened.
And this is European football, not American football, right?
Correct. Yes. We gave
different
up
rules.
We gave up the 2-point conversion early, so... It was hard, but, you know, we just couldn't break through the defense, so.
And then I do.
I got to come home and then do Bills stuff, which was equally as depressing.
Oh, yeah, you gotta love it. I do want to talk about tanking a little bit here, because the Bills almost lost to a tanking team last week, which, again, we didn't do an hour and 15-minute podcast talking about it that was lost. But we're not going to talk about that too much, because everyone's forgotten about the Dolphins game. They almost lost, but it was... whatever, it was a win. But I do want to talk about the Cincinnati Bengals. because they made a move today. They benched Andy Dalton, their longtime starting quarterback. I just want to say, because we're 15 minutes in, and we have a lot to talk about with the Bills.
We're going to be on for 3 hours.
Oh, I hope not. I hope not. It's 9 o'clock at night. I think Zach Taylor made a brilliant decision. I think he made a brilliant decision to bench Andy Dalton, because their team sucks. The Cincinnati Bengals are an awful football team with or without Andy Dalton. AJ Green, if he comes back, I don't know if he's going to make that football team that much better. I just think fundamentally there's something wrong with that roster, and I don't care who you have at quarterback. I think that is a 3 or 4 win team at best, probably. So for Zach Taylor to realize this and say, we're 0-8 as it is, it doesn't matter who we have under center, whether it's Andy Dalton, Ryan Finley, whoever, it doesn't matter. So for Zach Taylor to say, okay, we're going to have a top 2 pick, and Andy Dalton does not figure into my long-term ideas here, my long-term plan. So to use these final 8 games to see what they have in Ryan Finley. Granted, I don't think they're going to win many games. They're not going to go 0-16, but they might go 2-14 or 3-13. But he's going to use these final 8 games as an evaluation period to see what they have in Ryan Finley. And if he likes what he sees and they're picking 1 or 2, then he'll pick Chase Young, in which case they get a very good generational player from Ohio State. But if Ryan Finley doesn't show anything, he gets Tua or he gets Joe Burrow. So it really does suck for Andy Dalton, because he's been nothing but loyal to that team. Granted, he's always had a ceiling as just a game manager at the quarterback position, but it does suck that his time in Cincinnati is seemingly coming to an end like this. But also, I just think it's brilliant because, hey, Ryan Finley is a talented quarterback. I don't think he's great. I don't love Ryan Finley, but I do think there's something there. I kind of wanted Cincinnati to take Tyree Jackson in the draft just because I thought he would have been a fun Zach Taylor project. But regardless, to use these final 8 games to see what Ryan Finley has. And if Ryan Finley's good, if Ryan Finley blows it up and then he shows that he's a serviceable quarterback and then they get Chase Young, that's going to be a fun team regardless of who they pick in the draft, whether it's Tua, Joe Burrow, or Chase Young. So I'll go to you, D'Lo. Our good friend Andy Dalton, out of a job, supposedly. He got benched for a 4th-round quarterback. So how do you feel about Cincinnati's decision here?
I mean, they're grasping at straws right now. They're going to try anything. The team is horrendous. I mean, we've seen it's just not working. I mean, the offensive line is rugged. Joe Mixon can't get through anything. AJ Green's been hurt. There's really not a lot going well for them, so they might as well blow it up. You know, poor Zach Taylor thought he was going to walk in and at least make this be a decent attempt at a first season to kind of begin his ascent, and now he's pretty much on the same level as Brian Flores. So it's just unfortunately not a really great situation for Cincinnati, and truthfully, I don't even see them digging out of this over the next, you know, couple seasons. At least Miami has some draft picks mm-hmm. and some capital to work with. Cincinnati, it's not really looking promising in any way, shape, or form, and yet they took the Bills to the last minute in week 3.
Yeah.
The Bills
just
are
like
bad,
the Dolphins. Just like the Dolphins.
The Bills are
like
really
the Jets.
Bad.
Kyle, the first step is admitting.
Oh, God. Rich, how do you feel? This is a Bengals podcast.
Bengals wire. You know, I'm kind of torn on the Andy Dalton decision. On one hand, I mean, I think he's your best option to win. But on the other hand, it's like you want to see what you have before you go mm-hmm. into the draft next year. We saw other teams do this before, where you want to see what you have on your roster and if you need to address those areas or if there's a hidden gem there. You know, you never know. If you put in a guy, throw him into a fire, and he comes out and he's your franchise quarterback, you never know. You won't know until you do it. And they know at this point, you know, the season's a lost cause. They're halfway through the season. They mm-hmm. haven't won a game yet. They're not going to come back all of a sudden and make the playoffs at 8-8 or something. It's not going to happen. So you want to see what you have. You want to take stock of that. And I understand the decision. And I it just brings me back to my point all along, is that Andy Dalton is destined for the Denver Broncos.
Ooh. He really is. With Joe Flacco just like losing his mind at the press conference mm-hmm. and now he's out for how long?
Yeah. It makes too much sense. But when it happens, I should buy an Andy Dalton Broncos jersey.
Oh, you absolutely should.
And never wear it.
I think I think part of the reason why I like this so much is, A, it's proactive, and B, it's nice. It's just weird and kind of refreshing to see a team in this situation, 0-8, to just kind of admit defeat and be like, yeah, we're not coming back from this. I don't care who we have under center, we're not coming back from 0-8. We could win 6 games, but even then, we're not making the playoffs at 6-10. Even if we just somehow miraculously turn this around, if we win out, we're not making the playoffs. So at this point, for them to be like, yeah, let's see what we have in Ryan Finley, who tore it up in the preseason. I might be getting his name wrong, but I think his name is Ryan Finley from North Carolina State. That's Russell Wilson's like first alma mater. maybe he's Russell Wilson. There you go. But yeah, I just think it's very proactive, I think, for Zach Taylor to realize, no, Andy Dalton's not my quarterback of the future. Ryan Finley might not be either, but I at least owe it to myself, owe it to these guys to see if he is the future. And if not, hey, we got Tua, or we got Joe Burrow. And if he is the future, hey, we got Chase Young. So Cincinnati is a team to watch. If you guys are looking for a, not you guys, just in general, people who listen to this podcast, there's 11 of them, according to the people who like my tweet. But Cincinnati,
some of those are people on the podcast currently. Right. So.
Including people who are on the podcast, there's 11. do I count as a listener if I edit it?
Technically, yes.
All right, so 12. But Cincinnati is a team to watch regardless of how they finish the draft or how they finish the year, who they draft. I think just with Zach Taylor, I don't know if he's a good coach yet, but we'll see how it works, because being a head coach is so much more than being a good football mind.
He has a future, I'd say.
You have to set a culture.
I mean, he has that you know, offensive mindset that a lot of teams are looking for, and you saw flashes of that against the Bills. I mean, it's slightly, but I mean, they still have so much work to do where you can't really tell yet. I mean, the team is going to look completely different than when we saw them, you know, this year, when if it ever comes to, you know, a point where they're starting to peak and they're starting to get better. I mean, it's going to be a completely different team. It's like the Bills a couple of years ago when they completely turned around their roster, only kept a main chunk of guys. I mean, what if AJ Green's that guy and that's why they didn't trade him? I mean, they might be, I don't know if they're going to sign him after this year, but I mean, they might be wanting to see what he has left in the tank too.
Yeah, that is true. And I'm going on so many tangents, but that's what happens when we don't have a podcast for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I think part of the reason, or the fad in the NFL right now is hiring young offensive minds. This purely coming from Sean McVay and then Kyle Shanahan to an extent.
Have you met Sean McVay? Good. You're a candidate.
Yeah, exactly. The trend is you want the young offensive genius. But A, Sean McVay is kind of an abnormal person in his football
in
intellect.
In many ways.
Right, because you can ask him, hey, what play did you call on the third drive, second play, week 7 of your 2013 season? And he would tell you. He just, I think he has a photographic memory. I think that's literally what it is.
Like Mahomes.
I don't think people look at the culture enough. I think a lot of people clown on the culture, but culture is a huge part of football, especially. You can draw the perfect play, but if the people on the field don't care, if the people on the field don't care about winning and working for each other, that's not going to matter. So Sean McVay has created a good culture in LA, and I don't know if these people who are getting jobs as a result of Sean McVay's success and Kyle Shanahan's success, you know, Zach Taylor, Matt LaFleur's working right now, but Matt LaFleur also has Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
I don't know if these, or what's his name in Arizona, Cliff Kingsbury. I don't know if these coaches can match that culture. So we'll see how this pans out. It'll all, in due time, we'll figure out if they can create a culture, a winning culture. But right now, it's their football IQ that's getting them these jobs. And, you know, the Bills kind of bucked that trend when they went with Sean McDermott, who has created a good culture. And I think that's a good transition here to the Bills. They didn't make any moves at the trade deadline. It was 4 p.m. on Monday. They were linked to a lot of players Tuesday. I don't know. You know, it's been a long
Close
day.
Enough.
It's been a long week for me. So, yeah. And it's only Tuesday. Yeah, the Buffalo Bills did not make any moves. They were linked with a lot of guys. They were linked with Melvin Gordon. They were linked with AJ Green, Yannick Ngakoue to an extent. That might not be how you pronounce the name, but it's so fun to say. Sounded right. It's not Yannick Ngakoue. Just a great name. He's not a builder.
Feels right.
Nope.
It feels right. So when the trade deadline passed at 4 p.m. Tuesday, I think we were all just kind of like, huh, that's weird, especially just a little bit of a that's odd. I'm twirling my very short beard hair right now as a pondering movement. So I'm torn on this. Part of me is like, it makes sense, and another part of me is like, why would you not make the move? That part of me is saying they realize this isn't their year, because if you look at the 2017 season, which is the last time this team was in this exact position, 5-2 at the trade deadline, they traded for Kelvin Benjamin. They made a move that they felt set them over the edge and made them not a fringe playoff team, but a playoff team. This year, I think they see themselves as a playoff team, and they had the opportunity to make a move that would make them a playoff contender, whether that be through AJ Green, Melvin Gordon, a pass rusher, tight end, whatever. They had the opportunity to trade a high draft pick for a player who could have not only helped them get to the playoffs, but made them a contender once they got there. And given their schedule, this is a playoff team, I think, as is. I think they're 10-6, 11-5. But to see them not make a move to stay put, there could be circumstances. Maybe they did try to make moves and it just never... a good deal never presented itself. But to me, this kind of comes off as they realize they're not close to a Super Bowl this year, and they're not close to contending, not maybe necessarily a Super Bowl, but they're not a team that is built to go deep into the playoffs this year, and trading a first or a second round pick for a playmaker on either side of the ball just really wouldn't help them out that much this year, and thus they're going to wait until free agency, try to, you know, sign a few guys or make trades in the offseason when they can build a more complete roster, and thus making a move and giving up draft capital midseason wasn't a good decision. So I kind of see that. But then part of me on the other side is like, I don't think an offensive playmaker really helps this team. Yes, bringing in a Melvin Gordon or an AJ Green would help, immensely, probably. But then also, I think the fundamental problems on this offense are play calling and game management. So I don't think bringing in AJ Green or Melvin Gordon, what are they going to get? How many touches a game? There's only so many footballs to go around. I don't think bringing in AJ Green for his 4 receptions a game, I don't think that's going to put you over the edge. So I don't think, in that sense, I think it makes sense to not give up high draft picks for an offensive playmaker because the fundamental issues remain the same. So that's just my general takeaways here on the trade deadline. Was it was weird to see them not make a move, and it kind of comes off as they don't see themselves as a true contender this year, but at the same time, I don't think bringing in an offensive playmaker really would have helped that much anyway. So, Rich, how do you feel about their lack of movement at the trade deadline?
I'm okay with it, honestly. I know I might be in the minority here. I'm okay with it because I don't feel like any of the guys that were available were worth the amount of picks that, you know, we heard thrown around, you know, first round, second round picks to make the team, you know, take it to the next level, to the playoffs. I think this team is already a playoff team. You saw how weak the AFC is this year, where you have a decent roster, you have a pretty easy schedule where you have a path to the playoffs. I don't think adding a piece to Josh Allen's arsenal is really going to help him with his accuracy issues or his throwing. I don't think it's gonna. I think maybe in the offseason you're gonna be able to get some of these guys that are gonna be unrestricted free agents in the offseason too. Some of these guys that were looking for, you know, that teams were looking to trade or looking to move. A lot of these guys are free agents, you know, Melvin Gordon, AJ Green. These guys are on the market in the offseason. Bills would probably rather pay them then than, you know, try to move some capital around now for a guy that you might end up signing long term. So, I mean, it is unfortunate that they didn't add a piece, because you'd like to see them add something maybe defensively to bolster up that defensive line to get, you know, back to where it is. But I think they have I hate to say it, I think they trust what they have and trust their process of what they're doing. I don't know if they expected this year to be the year where they, you know, make it to the playoffs. I mean, they still have so much cap space coming up. They still have next year as well, too, where they want to go big probably in the offseason, really add some big pieces. And, I mean, you could have done something at the trade deadline, but, I mean, they trust what they have right now, so I'm content with it.
D'Lo, opinions on the Bills and, you know, just their willingness to stay mediocre. It's disgusting, isn't it?
Well, a lot of sarcasm on the show this week. I love it. I'm glad that they didn't make a move just for the sake of making a move, because you might as well, like, bring in, like, Dinah Zubris or somebody just to, like...
Hell yeah, dude!
Just to do that. Just, we gotta move somebody in because we gotta do something. But at the same time, it's kind of weird because their path to the playoffs is pretty easy.
Yeah.
But if they are to make the playoffs, they're going to be a wild card team. And what in God's name are they going to do against a wild card team? They don't match up against any of the current playoff teams right now. So the inability to find some, you know, at least a body to help them in the long run is a little disconcerting, because really, January could be really disappointing. It could be, you know, all right, we've made the playoffs. The expectation should be now we need to win in week one. We need to win in the wild card round. And unfortunately, I don't know who they're going to knock off in the wild card round if that happens. I mean, can you imagine if we end up seeing, like, if Kansas City's a 3 seed and we're the 6 seed? Or, like, what are we going to do with Houston? What are we going to do with Baltimore? Like, I don't know. That's just the challenge, just thinking about it. You know, I'm sure Bean did his due diligence and looked through and tried to find players, and ideally, the perfect deal wasn't there. However, it's just, I don't think the road's going to get any easier than this. Season getting in the playoffs. Like, next year, you look at next year's schedule, they're playing the AFCs or AFC West and the NFC West. So I don't think that's going to be any easier than what they're seeing now with the NFC East and the AFC North. So I don't know. It just feels like we're going to be spinning our wheels, and we might as well, like, hang on, as disappointing as it is to say, you know what, we're going to be discouraged when January comes around. Because unless this defense goes out of its world once again to play, and even though, I mean, think 2 years ago, they went crazy. They kept Jacksonville to 10 points. We put up a field goal. Mm-hmm. Like, where's it going to get better? Like, are we going to hope Devin Singletary, you know, all of a sudden shoulders a load? Oh, wait, we'd have to give him more than 3 carries a game. You know, I don't know. It's tough because it feels like we're on the cusp of something good, and yet it's just going to be out of our reach.
Well, that's the thing, is this team, just everything, all the cards have fallen in place for this team. Mm-hmm. They're going to be if they're not a 10-win team this year, something will go very wrong, and we should have a serious conversation about just coaching. Because if they don't ink out, or is that even a term? It is now. If they don't inch out, I don't know. If they don't win 10 games this year, that's just, with this schedule, it's just an embarrassment, because they should realistically get to 10, 11, 12 wins. This is the type of team that should be squeaking out wins, not losing games they should win. So, but like you said, D'Lo, they're going to get to the wild card as an 11 or 12 win team. You're going to have the national analysts who haven't watched a snap of Buffalo Bills football this year saying, oh yeah, this is a good team, very stout defense. This is a team that could make some noise. If they get matched up against New England, watch out. And they'll get embarrassed in the first round because Josh Allen can't play in big games. So they're going to make it to the playoffs and then get killed in the first round by Kansas City or Baltimore, just because that's what's going to happen. So you would have liked to have seen them make a move now at the trade deadline, the type of move that when they do make the playoffs, it does give them the opportunity to actually make some noise, whether that be an elite receiver like AJ Green or a playmaker like Melvin Gordon. You would have liked, or me, I keep saying you, the royal you, I would have liked to have seen them make a move that just not only, because they're going to make the playoffs, if they don't, we have bigger issues, but I would have liked to have seen them make a move that would make them a competitive team once they get to the playoffs. And I love seeing these tweets from people saying, I'm happy that the Bills didn't, or, you know, Brandon Bean has had a plan all along, and I'm happy the Bills didn't, you know, sacrifice their long-term plan for a short-term gain. Like, excuse me? What? AJ Green is 32 or 31. Melvin Gordon's, what, late 20s? Okay, let's talk about AJ Green. AJ Green is old. But are you telling me that AJ Green would not help Josh Allen's long-term development? If he plays with a player like AJ Green, that is helping his confidence for life. He's looking at himself as a better quarterback because he has a better player catching the football. That is helping him mature as an NFL player. You're not just, that's very short-sighted to say that I'm happy they didn't make a short-sighted move, because it really is, because AJ Green, yes, he would help on the field now, but he would help long-term with helping Josh Allen grow as an NFL quarterback, adjust to the NFL game, make confident throws because he's confident his receiver will go up and get it. AJ Green would not have been a short-sighted move. He would have been a move that would have helped Josh Allen really adjust to the NFL. And Melvin Gordon even. Melvin Gordon would have been a move that if Josh Allen not just handing it off to him, but getting it to him in open space with Melvin Gordon then making moves and getting up or picking yards after the catch. It would have been any move they would have made would have helped Josh Allen's confidence, and I don't think either move for a playmaker would have been short-sighted. So anything to add here from either of you before we get into the Eagles review?
There's not always a Kelvin Benjamin to be found at the trade deadline.
I mean, at the same time, though, like you're saying, Kyle, like AJ Green and Melvin Gordon, but you can get these guys after the season if you trust that the team you have around you is good enough to be a long-term team and you trust, quote-unquote, trust the process, that you can go and get these guys in the offseason when you have so much cap space and you don't need to use these draft picks. I mean, if the schedule is easy this year, you still have a path to the playoffs without going to get these guys, where you can just get them in the offseason, make it for next year, because next year you do have a tougher schedule. You have Seattle at home. You have LA at home. You have a lot of decent teams that are lined up on your schedule. It's not going to be a cakewalk. So you got to make those moves in the offseason as well, too. And, I mean, you end up not having to use a draft pick or two to bring over a guy that you might just end up signing after the year anyways.
I see that, but A, if you get him now and you re-sign him, you're going to have him regardless. And then B, you would have them for the playoffs this year. Does AJ Green or Melvin Gordon get them over the hump against Baltimore or against Kansas City? Probably not, but it sure as hell gives them a better shot. It's just, I don't know. I would have liked to have seen them make a move, whether it be for an offensive playmaker or a defensive guy, but it just didn't happen. And like you said, they might. I think they are going to make moves this offseason. I think they are going to bring in a marquee player, which they haven't had in years, because Brandon Bean likes to make moves. They tried to bring in the marquee player last offseason in Antonio Brown, and it just didn't work out. So I think, they dodged a bullet there. But I think this team does want a marquee player. I think they want to develop their own. I think they are developing their own, but I think they're not afraid to bring in a marquee player if the opportunity presents itself. So we'll just see. But, Rich, anything to add here before we get into the next conversation?
No.
All right. Buffalo Bills lose to the Philadelphia Eagles in a banger. Just a great game. 31-13. We're not going to do takeaways. We're just going to discuss the game in general, because I think if we did do takeaways, it would all just devolve into what a bad game this was. Just starting with the weather, it was just bad weather. That's my takeaway, was 50-mile-per-hour gusts, wind. Rich, you're not here, but we're having bad weather this week.
It was windy here in Portland, too. It was actually like 30 this morning with like 20-30-mile-an-hour winds, so it felt like I was there.
Yeah, but we're getting a 60-mile-per-hour gust on Halloween night, so
beautiful.
Good for us, dude.
A good time.
But anyway, bad weather. Josh Allen, bad quarterback in this game.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I didn't think he looked bad, and then he started playing really badly. He finished the game 16 of 34 for 169 yards, two touchdowns for a quarterback rating of 81.6, and you know the quarterback rating is the most important stat.
and three fumbles.
Oh, that doesn't show up in NFL GSIS.
Oh. Ooh,
so they're hiding.
He only lost one.
They're hiding the faults.
I mean, you can easily summarize this game, though. I mean, the Bills were outplayed by the Eagles, and at the same time, they were also very much outcoached and out-game-planned. Mm-hmm. It was so obvious to see what the Eagles did to attack the Bills' weaknesses, and I mean, the running game was working for them. They kept using it. You know, the Bills down, down 13 with 5 minutes left or 8 minutes left. They punt, they call draw play on third and 20-something. I mean, It's a different mentality from both those coaches. They might be from the same coaching tree, but they have very different mentalities on aggressiveness and progressive ideas in football. And Doug Peterson, I mean, they're 4-4. They still very much have a chance in their division and very much a chance in to make the playoffs with the Eagles, and they needed that win. They wanted it more. The Bills came out there looking like they were just going to have the win handed to them, you know. The Josh Allen made some good throws. He corrected his actions, but I mean, after that first touchdown drive, 3 of 14 is horrible. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. After you can talk about the wind, you can talk about drops, but I mean, both teams had to deal with the weather out there. It's not just one team playing in that, and you want more out of him and you expect more out of him at this point. But I mean, it's a learning game for him. It's good that, you know, you can fall back and the team is still 5-2 at this point. It's not, you know, a lost season or you're 500 or something and you really need to win. You still have, you know, 3 games above .500. It's a learning experience for him, and he's going to have these road, you know, these humps along the way. And it's just one of those games where you'd like to have it back because it is a home game and you want to stay, you know, undefeated or, well, one loss at home. And, you know, with 3 games in a row, you want to take advantage of those. But, I mean, they're going to make some adjustments. Brian Daboll's play calling was very, very conservative, I'd say.
Very.
The decision to, you know, activate Robert Foster, who didn't record a catch, I don't believe, over Isaiah McKenzie, who's more of a, you know, a guy you can put in motion and do a little shovel pass to, which counts. I mean, it's like a handoff, but it's a pass. But you can do that to him and change the, you know, defense, keep them on their toes, keep them not expecting the same thing every down. It really changed that game plan, and Dable's playbook seemed pretty conservative, and it didn't really work out for the offense. When it did, it was more so, you know, the Philly defense not really performing well and their injuries coming into, you know, into play, where you saw Robert Foster touchdown and you saw Cole Beasley, and those were kind of, it seemed like, okay, that's a defense that is injured that is not that good right now. And the rest of the time, it was just very, very vanilla play calling, and the defense couldn't get off the field. The offense couldn't stay on the field. It's just an overall bad game for them, but they have the luckiest bounce back game after that, which is a 1-win team coming into town with very questionable, you know, performances. And you have a chance to add another win onto the win column, go to 6-2 at home, and, you know, end up going to Cleveland the week after that for a tough game. So they have a very fortunate schedule ahead of them.
D'Lo, what are your reactions to this?
I mean, it was a total team effort in this loss. all of the units were not firing on any cylinders. I think the concern with this game is pretty much it kind of shakes our confidence a little bit because, you know, next to New England, and we feel like New England's in a different stratosphere. This was a game that was going to be a little bit of a litmus test for us to see how do we fare with a team that's pretty much a playoff team, and it just didn't happen for us. So there's definitely some worry about looking forward. Like we're talking about 11-12 win season. I'm having trouble getting to 11-12 wins right now because now it's, you know, those games that we thought would be, you know, kind of winnable in the bad games are now, can they really pull this off? Like even like Cleveland, for example, who's struggling mightily. Like we go into Cleveland in 2 weeks. A few weeks ago, I think that's a gimme. Like, we're going to walk in, we're going to roll Baker Mayfield, we'll plant our flag on this stupid dog pound, and then we'll go up to whatever, 8-1 or whatever the hell we'd be, 8-2. And then this game just kind of blew that up. I mean, Carson Wentz went 17 of 24 in a game. So, I mean, he found a way to throw through the wind. I mean, Robert Foster gets put on the field, and he gets targeted once on a throw that's underthrown with the wind at Allen's back. So why he was activated is another story. It's really disconcerting that the defensive line got rolled. I mean, they got smacked in the face, and for the fourth time in the last year and a half, a team has run for over 200 yards against us. It's almost like if we know we're going to, like, lose, McDermott realizes that a loss, whether it's by 1 point or by 50 points, it still counts the same. So it was like they bundled up in the wind and were just like, let's just get out of here and hope for the best next week against Washington, because it just did not feel like a game where there was any, you know, any urgency at all. When they went down, you know, when the second touchdown was scored after Singletary scored, it brought us in within a score, and we thought, okay, this is all right. And then all of a sudden, Philadelphia scores. But after they got up by 11, you thought, this game's over. Like, we can go whatever. We can go inside and whatever.
It never really felt like they had a chance.
It just didn't feel like the second half they had any shot at coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was no cohesion whatsoever.
No.
And
no.
A lot of people on Bill's Twitter are saying that it's like time to hit the panic button. I don't think so.
Two losses, 5 wins. No.
Yeah, I've said they're going to go 10-6 this year, all year long. At times I've been able to get them up to 11-5, but through all of that, I've had the Eagles as one of the losses. Mm-hmm. I think the Eagles have the better roster. I think they have the better coaching staff. And it was a home game, but I just think overall the Eagles are probably the better run team and the better team just in general. And you saw that. What's the one thing the Bills have had issues defending on defense this year? It's screen passes. And they abused that. They found that on film and they said, okay, we're just going to go all screen passes and then it's going to help us in the run game. And it did. They just completely just demolished this defense, just picked it apart, found its weaknesses. And once they found the weakness, they gutted the confidence. And after that, they just shoved it down their throat. And in a game like that, where the weather is playing a role, it didn't look like it was affecting Carson Wentz, who's a very good quarterback, but just in general, they figured out they found their weakness and they outcoached the Bills. And then on the offensive side for Buffalo, it was a sultry combination of bad play calling and bad execution. Very pedestrian game plan from Brian Daboll. Mm-hmm. It didn't have any creativity. It was almost like the old, what was the old meme a few years ago? Just like hand off, pass on third and long and incompletion, punt. That's essentially what it was. It felt like there was nothing. They could not get into rhythm, and you see that in Josh Allen's sub 50% completion percentage. I mean, I think there was a drive where they had in the second half where they had three passing plays and they were all throwaways. Mm-hmm. It was just bad execution, bad play calling, and I don't know what the blame should be placed on there, but like you said, D'Lo, was a team effort in this loss. Defense got ran over. Run defense, that's been their strength. The defense has had a lot of strengths this year, and that was one of them. Run strength, I think they had one of the league's best run defenses, and to have over 200 yards on you, to have Miles Sanders look like Barry Sanders out there, that's not great. And then
I like that. That was good.
I'm pretty good at this sometimes when I can talk and construct sentences. Levi Wallace kind of had a bounce back game, if you want to talk about that. Tremaine Edmonds had a bad game.
I mean, at least their punter got to flex.
Yeah, true.
I mean,
yeah. That's really what matters at the end of the day.
At the end of the day, that's what matters.
At the end of the day, special teams is the most important facet.
It is.
I mean, it's a very important facet, and it didn't work out for the Bills. I mean, Hoshka missed a field goal towards the end of the half, and I mean, if anyone sees this as not a team loss, then they really need to reevaluate. Yeah,
you can't pick and choose who's
football.
The worst unit on this day.
Like, you can't say, it's not Josh Allen's fault. It's the defense's fault. Oh, it's not the defense's fault. It's Josh Allen's fault. It's everyone's fault in that game.
It's pretty
spectacular. You can't just look at that game and say one aspect of this game was the worst part and that's the reason they lost. It's a 31-13 game. You score 13 points in the NFL, you're not going to win a lot of games. And you let up 31 points in the NFL, you're also not going to win a lot of games. This team isn't built to shoot out like we've talked about before. You need to have a good defense, and you need to have a strong game plan. And you need to make it simple for Josh Allen, and you need to also, at the same time, keep the defense on their toes. They didn't do any of those things, so that's why they lose.
This team isn't built to beat good teams. That's the issue.
Isn't. I mean, it's built to contend for the first half against a strong offense, and then you cross your fingers that Josh Allen would do something good and play a complete game. But it's yet to be seen that he has played a complete football game for this team this year. He has not had one game where he has
ever
had all four quarters has had a good game ever. Yeah, in both seasons, he has not had that. You need that still. But you also need a defense that can be there when you have these issues on offense, that can get, you know, the offense back on the field, maybe get some momentum going. It's all-around loss, like we said, team
and
loss.
The two times this team has faced a good team this year, the offense has crumbled. Mm-hmm. They haven't played a complete game yet, And it's just, it is worrisome looking forward, because they're just lucky they play 10 or 11 bad teams this year. Because mm-hmm. if they played any more than that, they would lose a lot of games, because this team's just not, it's just not built to compete when the defense isn't standing on its head. Because the offense, and I don't even think it's a personnel issue. I think it's more so coaching, the lack of the ability to call a good play or a complete mm-hmm. game, and the lack of a killer mentality. If they have a 2-score lead entering the second half, their foot is off the gas in the mm-hmm. second half on offense. They don't care. They're just like, get us out of here. Run the ball. Let's get out of here. It doesn't
instinct. They need it.
They don't have it. And it is worrisome, but then also that's why I'm not heartbroken that they didn't go out and acquire an offensive playmaker, because what were they going to do? Because mm-hmm. the fundamental issue is coaching and game management on offense. Adding AJ Green or Melvin Gordon, yes, it'd make the team better on paper, and probably objectively the team would be better because they would have better players, but also when the issue is coaching, when that doesn't change, it's really not going to help no matter who you have, because I think they do have a good receiving core. John Brown has looked amazing this year. Mm-hmm. Cole Beasley at times has looked very good. I don't even want to talk about Robert Foster. Why? I don't know why he's still on the roster. He had a good end of last year, but say what you will, he is a one-dimensional receiver. His job is literally just run fast, and maybe Josh Allen can't throw the deep ball anymore, so why do you have him on the roster if Robert Foster, the only thing he's good for, Josh Allen can't do? That doesn't make sense.
I think that was the point of activating them, though, too, is to try to spark that Josh Allen deep ball, because you saw that connection last year where he was able to complete those deep passes a few times. But, I mean, obviously, last game, it shows that's maybe more than just Robert Foster out there. Maybe it is an issue with Josh Allen where he isn't able to make those deep throws. He's overthrown every single deep ball he's had this year. I cannot recall one single pass he's had over 20 yards or 30 yards that has been, aside from the one to John Brown against the Jets where he
underthrew him. Yeah.
And John Brown was able to make a nice play on that. Aside from that, he hasn't had any good deep balls.
There's not been one that's perfect. No. They're either overthrown or underthrown.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Robert Foster played a whopping 8 snaps.
Oh, my God.
So, he has...
I mean, Isaiah McKenzie's probably playing 8 snaps, but he's also contributing 30, 40 yards, whether it be, you know, a little pitch handoff or something right. on an end-around. Robert Foster contributed 0.
Oh, sorry. Contributing 0. He has exactly 0 catches this year.
Well, I mean, and not even looking at yardage, just what they do with McKenzie compared to Foster, they can line him up anywhere, right? They line him up, he's essentially a decoy, because if they do take the shot to him deep downfield, either he's not catching it or Josh is overthrowing him. Mm. But what they do with McKenzie compared to what they do with Foster, they put McKenzie in motion. I said it last week on the podcast that doesn't exist. I was like, Isaiah McKenzie runs 6 miles a game, just going in motion across the line of scrimmage. They use him in such unique ways, and to just bench him, and granted, he's not the best player. I'm not saying Isaiah McKenzie's an elite player by any means. But I think Isaiah McKenzie's a very good gadget guy that mm-hmm. if you give him the opportunity, he's shown when you give him the opportunity, no matter how you use him, whether you do want to hand it off or do an alley-oop pass or use him as a receiver downfield, he will contribute. Give him the opportunity, he will reward you. And to not see that and to bench him for Robert Foster, who is as one-dimensional as they come, it's just, it really sucks to see. And I understand the logic behind it, like you said, Rich, to try to get that deep ball going. And the Eagles, I think they had one of the league's worst passing defenses, so to bench a guy like Isaiah McKenzie, who you are going to use on the underneath stuff and the gadget stuff and the creative stuff, to try to put in a guy with more big playability who you could abuse that secondary with, and Brian Daboll must have known, I'm not doing anything creative this game, so I don't need the creative guy. I'm just going to try to run the ball, and if that doesn't work, I'm just going to let Josh Allen throw it 30 times. We'll see what happens. And that's why they put Robert Foster in the game, and it didn't work. And I guess that's my main thing, is it just, I don't know. From personnel decisions, benching Isaiah McKenzie, who objectively offers more to this team than Robert Foster, and putting Robert Foster in over him. Like, if you're going to bench anyone, why not Duke Williams? What has Duke Williams done since catching a game-winning pass? Nothing. It's just a Duke Williams fan favorite. I can't talk, but yeah, I got really passionate there about Isaiah McKenzie, guys.
That's okay. I mean, you got passionate about a guy they picked up that was cut from a team. Go Broncos. I mean, Isaiah McKenzie, he does make a defense think when he's out there. He makes a defense try to, you know, make sure that they have someone responsible for him if he comes in motion where they're able to cover him up. But, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not much of a factor, but it's more of a factor than Robert Foster, like you said, where he is one-dimensional. And going into that game, I did think it was a good idea to have Robert Foster active over Isaiah McKenzie because you added that deep threat. But as we saw, it didn't work. It didn't really come to fruition. Robert Foster had no catches. And, you know, it's a good thing, though, that they have such a weak opponent coming up next week where they're able to, you know, make some changes, see what worked against the Eagles and see what didn't work against the Eagles and, you know, carry those into the next week.
Rich, you summed up everything I was trying to say in 5 minutes in your first sentence there. So thank you. D'Lo, anything to add about the game here before we get going?
Yeah, the only thing is you guys mentioned like, you know, McKenzie and pre-snap movement. I can't really think of many instances where they had players in motion this weekend.
You're right, yeah.
It was pretty stagnant, right? Like, I can't, mm-hmm. like, I'm not going to go back and watch the film. I'll be honest. It's not happening. The game's Sunday. I'm
just, don't do that to yourself.
It's just not happening. I'm not going to do that to myself, and I'm not going to get mad again. So, but I just, literally, I can't remember guys going in motion. I can't remember, you know, Andre Roberts coming out at all just to do his little, like, you know, whatever, motion stuff. I really can't remember them using a lot of any type of movement pre-snap at all. So it's, I don't know. It was just a frustrating game. It's nice that it's done. It's nice that they're going on to Washington, so we should just kind of look forward to Washington and go beat up on Dwayne Haskins or whoever, Colt McCoy or, you know, Mark Rippon or whoever they have at quarterback. Game.
Anyone.
It's going to be fun.
Bill Callahan.
Bill Callahan once accused of sabotaging a Super Bowl, so this will be fun.
Second time interim head coach.
Yes, you're
the
right.
Last time he took over for Gruden as well. In Oakland, he
very
took over
true.
For John Gruden, and now in Washington, Jay Gruden.
I watched a video about the whole John Gruden thing. Apparently, the thing is when John Gruden was traded from Oakland to Tampa Bay, the one bugaboo was you can't bring any of your staff. So I guess the fear was that the one holdup.
1998.
Yeah, was that Bill Callahan got Oakland to the Super Bowl the next year. But then the fear was that he was going to sabotage the Super Bowl and then go and join John Gruden in Tampa Bay after that. And he did lose the Super Bowl, but I don't think he joined John Gruden after that. So that's your fun little takeaway to look at for this game is Bill Callahan once sabotaged a Super Bowl. So who says he won't do it this week against the Bills? They shouldn't need the coach to sabotage the game to defeat this team, this Washington team. They are playing harder. They are playing for their coach now because I guess they like Bill Callahan. But again, this team, if this is a playoff team, if Buffalo, if you're saying you're a playoff team, if you don't make any moves at the trade deadline because you're happy with your team and you think it's a playoff team, you should beat the Redskins pretty handedly at home. But I can't wait until they're down by a score in the fourth quarter, and then Josh Allen leads his fifth game-winning drive of the season, and we can say Josh Allen is a good fourth-quarter quarterback.
And people can tweet about how many fourth-quarter comebacks he had.
Exactly, because he came back against the worst team in the league for a second time this season, so that'll be...
Let's hope it doesn't come to that.
They've just narrowly beaten the two worst teams in the league this year, so they're just going to narrowly beat Washington, but they all look just the same. They all look just the same in the win column, and we will be back next week to discuss the game. Maybe there will be some audio issues again. I hope not. But thank you guys for joining me. Rich, where can people find you on Twitter if they want to talk to you?
They can find me at @ByRichKowalski on Twitter.
D'Lo, where can they find you?
They can find me at @JDeLauro on the Twitter.
And they can also find you via email.
Oh,
via the Bills Wire... mobile website.
I believe they send all messages to Kyle Salagi because he's the producer, editor, host. He'll deal with anything.
He writes the script.
Yep, this is all scripted. This is a 59-page script. You can follow Bills Wire on Twitter, at the Bills Wire on Twitter. I think I said that already, I don't know. On Facebook, at Bills Wire, on Instagram at the Bills Wire. You can follow me on Twitter, at Kyle Salagi. Make sure to subscribe to Bills Wire podcast feed on iTunes. You can listen on Spotify, a bunch of other podcast outlets. You can read the Bills Wire articles on billswire.usatoday.com. You can do all that good stuff. You can watch the Buffalo Bills play next week, and they might lose, and that'll be fun.
They're not gonna lose.
Don't say that. We've been duped before. Nope. We've been had before by this team.
This Philadelphia game was a toss-up. It was only a 1.5-point favorite.
It was, but what are they this week? What's the spread?
I think it's like 8.
That could be higher. Let's hope we don't have to talk. Let's hope we're not just... If they lose to Washington, you are going to see 3 people lose their minds next week.
They're currently a 10-point favorite. Oh. So.
All right, there we go. Double digits. Love to
see it. So we'll win by 4.
Right. Exactly. So thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.